The Guardian.
Hi, I'm Max Rushton, and this is The Guardian Football Weekly, one game into the Premier League, so let's not sensationalise things just yet. What a weekend! Is Manchester United's name on the title? Crisis at Chelsea, Costa in prison, free the Chelsea one, Rooney stuns Stoke, Huddersfield stun Palace, Jonjo Shelvey doesn't stun anyone, Arsenal managed to overcome their zonal marking, and Liverpool concede late, which gives us a great chance to discuss the offside laws. Elsewhere, a worrying kick clash in the El Clasico Super Cup as Ronaldo scores, is sent off and shoves the referee. Neymar's goal-to-price ratio is now 1 to 198 million as he nets on his debut. We'll catch up on the Football League and have a huge preview of Wednesday's international friendly between Andorra and Qatar, plus your questions, and that'll do for today's Guardian Football Weekly. Paolo Bandini, welcome to this season's pod.
Hello.
A lot of Italian weight on your shoulders.
I can take it.
It's a big season for Bandini.
It's a fascinating season in Italy. I don't know if you want me to go straight in on that, but there's lots to be said.
Barry Glendenning, we went to the pub yesterday to watch Spurs Newcastle. You left after half an hour.
Correct, yes.
Why?
Because I had to go and meet somebody for lunch.
Okay. Some real friends.
Yeah.
Okay. And Jonathan Wilson, hello.
Hello.
We have a tweet from Gareth. You've got your breath back.
I've got my breath back.
Just been to see your personal trainer.
I have.
Gareth tweeted, I presume you know Gareth, unless he was in the crowd at your cricket match. What was Wilson's best shot in his 77 not out at the weekend? And how frustrated was he that the tail could not help him to his ton?
I don't know who Gareth is.
Really?
But... what happened? We bowled them out for 157. Mm-hmm. I was asked to open, which I haven't done for 15 years. And with a fair bit of fortune, I scored 77 not out. The last four wickets fell at the other end. And we lost by three runs. I carried my bat.
Oh, so, have you ever scored a century?
No. That was my previous highest score was 51.
Oh. But you weren't going to get to a century anyway if you're only three runs short.
No, I was gutted by was not winning the game.
Oh.
Yeah, we were 154 for six and 154 all out.
You're a team player. You're not like that striker who wants to score a hat-trick and doesn't care about the result.
I mean, obviously, the pain of a defeat would have been far greater had I not scored 77 not out. And the best shot, they brought their opening bowler back towards the end, and his first ball was short and wide, and I absolutely creamed a cut before.
Classic Wilson. I've scored two centuries in my career.
Have you?
And the first one, I retired on 101. And a tee, the opposition scorer, came up to me and said... you retired on 91. It's actually quite a cocky time to say, do you know what? I've had enough of this. Yeah. Right, football then. Jonathan, Chelsea 2, Burnley 3. In the preview to this, I said, this is the dream start for anyone, with all due respect to Burnley.
You were wrong.
I was.
It could have been a game that Chelsea won 3 or 4-0, but with everything going on, with Conte's position, with the frustration of a lack of signings... And then to get a red card after 13 minutes. And Chelsea just lost their heads completely after that. For the last half hour of the first half, Chelsea were as harebrained as they've been in years. Just offensively horrendous.
Barry, do you want to practice Gary Cahill?
Cahill.
Gary Cahill?
Cahill.
Was Gary Cahill's red card fair?
I think so. I mean, it wasn't a particularly vicious challenge, but by the letter of the law, those challenges are punishable by a red card. I don't think he can have any complaints. And to be honest, he didn't really have any complaints.
He was really polite about it, wasn't he?
Yeah. I mean, David Luiz was far more upset about it than he was. And I was quite surprised David Luiz didn't also get his marching orders. Chelsea could conceivably have finished the game with eight men, because David Luiz lost the plot completely. He didn't play well. He was constantly nipping at the referee and complaining. I think going in at half-time and coming back out for the second half, he was whinging. And you could see the ref was getting pretty fed up with him, and he could conceivably have been a third sending off for Chelsea.
Yeah, Fabregas should have. You know, his sending off was totally fair as
well. It's a disgrace. He's a disgrace on Fabregas's part. It's what on earth was he doing? His tackle was worse than Cahill's. Mm. Yeah, he could have got a straight red for that. And having already been booked for sarcastically applauding a ref, I mean, just a gross lack of professionalism. Cahill was slightly unlucky that he overstretched, and I think Barry's right. If it's not the worst foul in the world, it probably was a red. if Fabregas was sort of a red squared, it was just... if I were Chelsea, I'd ban him for a month for that. I just think that's despicable.
I'm not sure they can afford to ban at the moment, because they're going to struggle to fill a midfield in the next game,
which is at Wembley against Spurs. Paolo, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with on both the sendings off. I think Cahill's was one of those where, when I saw it in real time, I thought, I think like a bunch of people, I was quite surprised by it. You see it the second time around, and the studs are quite a long way up. And there's still plenty more to be said about Chelsea, I suppose. I thought Morata coming off the bench was good. And that's the sort of the one bright point in there for them, not just the goal. I thought his flick on was excellent. He generally, I think he's a very good player. I think he's not really had a particularly warm reception in the UK media so far, because he's a player who still at this point in his career, I guess some people felt he hasn't proven something, because he has been at Juventus and Real Madrid, and in both situations he wasn't really the number one guy. In fact, he was often on the bench for both teams. I think for both teams he was an exceptional player off the bench, and I think he's going to do very well in the Premier League. But I'm going to be that guy who says, maybe we should talk about Burnley as well, because talk about teams having not the greatest sort of transfer window, you might say. You know, it's all great. They sold Michael Keane. Who have they brought in? I think the only starter out of their new signings was Cork in midfield, and they played excellently in that first half.
They've also brought in Phil Bardsley and John Walters.
Yeah. The two of the few transfers that you might have completely missed, like Barry missed Jay Rodriguez, had absolutely no idea that he'd gone to West Brom. Yeah, it's interesting, actually. We got a tweet that said, I didn't write the name down, so apologies, but just about everybody except Burnley played 3-4-3 this weekend. Are Burnley going to do that to everyone?
Well, I feel like this is a question for Jonathan, if we're going to get tactical about it, but the return of 4-5-1 as a counter to 3-4-3 all over again?
I mean, I guess the way you count up a 3-4-3 is, or a way of counting it, is to sit men deep in midfield. And if you can get a block of three there in a 4-5-1, it is a way of doing it. I thought Vokes looked really good, which is good to see after all the injury problems he's had, that I think he looked fully fit again at last.
But this is the area where they would be most interested in upgrading, I suppose, still Burnley. I mean, they were looking at Asson Belonga all summer, weren't they? And that didn't happen for them. So I think there's a notion that they still need help up front. But yeah, Vokes had a great game.
Here's a tweet from Matthew, who says, who had a more successful Premier League debut, Jeremy Boga or Ali Dyer? Which I think is a bit harsh, isn't it, on Boga?
Well, in a sense, Boga did his job, which is to draw attention to the fact that Conte's unhappy.
What do we make of the Costa situation? Here is quotes. I wouldn't be allowed access to the first team dressing room. I'd have no contact with the guys. I'm not a criminal. I don't think it's fair, after all I have done, to be treated like that. I respect Conte as a great coach. He's done a good job, but as a person, no. Barry.
Well, that interview was conducted by a Daily Mail reporter whose name escapes me.
Adam Crafton,
who went all the way to, was it Lagarta in Brazil, to doorstep Diego Costa, and what a sensational coup that was for him to get
there. The timing was perfect. If it is true, he knocked on the door as the third goal went in. He just had his transistor radio to his ear. Now's the time.
Interestingly, Costa was watching the game and cheering on Chelsea. But yeah, I think I saw Barney was on Twitter today saying that he doesn't have a leg to stand on. And I think there's an article in the pipeline. It's Barney workshopping his material, as he tends to do, either in the office or online before writing articles, to gauge the public opinion. And I'm inclined to think he's right. You know, if Costa isn't wanted at Chelsea, he's going to be allowed to leave. So why is he sitting in Brazil sulking? And, you know, I think he's been fined repeatedly for not turning up to training because he's in breach of contract. And then when he eventually does have a move sanctioned, he's not going to be fit enough to play, you know, for a while.
He may be going to the gym. He may have a trainer like Jonathan has.
He does have a personal trainer, of course. Yeah.
He's not the same one as yours.
I think, you know, on that point of Costa, that it's not like he's been a model professional all the way through his Chelsea career. You know, he's been fined for turning up late after summer breaks before. He clearly switched off in January. You know, his form in the last 4 months of the season was nothing like his form until January. It's a ridiculous situation for Chelsea to get themselves in, but I can see why Conte is annoyed with him and doesn't want him sort of poisoning what seems to be a pretty dispirited atmosphere even further.
Just on the personal trainer thing, I've had one briefly, and my first was to say, because don't hire a personal trainer who lives directly opposite the pub you drink in often. particularly when that pub doesn't have a curtain on the window.
I mean, I think there's a whole new podcast in Barry's Fitness Tips.
But the other thing was, The first session I had with him, he trained me so hard, and there were, you know, giant tractor tires and stuff involved. I ended up throwing up three times on the way home afterwards, and then just went, there are easier ways of throwing up after spending 30 quid and more pleasurable ways.
Perhaps he was not the world's greatest psychologist. You know how they said Mike Brearley had a degree in people? Maybe he hadn't quite got a GCSE in people.
Well, some people, you know, maybe Barry's one of those people you need to put your arm round and not kick up the backside.
Quite a long way.
Mr. Tickle needs to be. All right, Manchester United 4, West Ham 0. Now, I can't remember who it was on the pod last week who was going on and on about Man United just played boring, dirty, long ball football. Yeah, it was me, wasn't it? And now I've realised that West Ham aren't Real Madrid, and that actually Manchester United can play with pace and look quite impressive. Barry, do you want to kick us off?
Well, I was very entertained by Manchester United, and I can't think of a single performance they put in last season that left me thinking, yeah, I'm glad I watched that game. But they were really entertaining, very imposing, physically enormous side now.
Maybe they've got personal trainers.
Maybe they have. But yeah, they were excellent. West Ham were poor. So, you know, we'll see in time if this is going to be a recurring
thing.
Yes, thank you.
Sometimes it's hard to find the right words.
Well, I think that is the point, isn't it? It's only West Ham. West Ham had a habit last season of getting battered by decent sides. So, well as United played,
yeah, I mean,
a little bit of caution.
But I think there's also, as I remember the beginning of last season, because United won three games in a row to start last season, exactly the same thing about them being this big, strong side with Ibrahimovic up front was pretty much what we were all thinking of them then. Now, I do think that there was a speed to them this weekend that was quite exciting. I think that the fluidity of everything, Lukaku was just having an absolute storm. There's no question about that. Not just the goals. I thought the first goal was just extremely well taken, but his movement, coming back, making little backheel flicks in midfield and everything. But the speed at which they went was what caught my eye. And I think that what will be interesting is that this was actually a pretty aggressive team lineup. You look at the sort of the number of attack-minded players in the team. No Ander Herrera. They went with a group of players who were designed to get at West Ham, and they did. Whether Mourinho will stick with that when he comes up against teams that are a little bit less imposing than West Ham have been on their travels, then, you know, we'll see. My expectation with Jose is that he will always retreat a little bit when it comes to the big games. But
also, that was Lukaku's 11th goal, or 10th and 11th goals in 12 matches against West Ham.
Oh, I've got 13 games in my stats. Mm. Oh, well, that's fine. Still, either way, impressive.
Other sort of strikers and or bogey strikers for various teams. Didier Drogba versus Arsenal, 13 in 15 games.
Cool.
Robin van Persie v Stoke, 11 in 12. Michael Owen against Newcastle.
And for Newcastle, to be fair.
13 in 10. And the king of them all, I think, David Nugent against Ipswich for various clubs, has scored 15 in 15.
Barry, that's the most research I think you've ever done for any. I'm really impressed.
Thank you.
I enjoyed that. So, look, well done, Manchester United.
And thank you to whoever compiled that list and just plagiarised.
Should we go back to the opening game of the season, Friday Night Football?
Just can we throw in one extra word just for Joe Hart,
of
who
course
conceded 62 goals in 36 Serie A games last season and has conceded 4 in his first back in the Premier League. So poor Joe's travail.
Sad for Joe. Although, he wasn't really.
No, I don't think you could really blame him for what happened this weekend. But then that was probably true a lot in Italy last season because Torino weren't great at defending either. But yeah.
Reminds me of my favourite moment in phone-in radio ever. And Bristol City had just signed David James. I've probably told this anecdote before, but you know, it's never stopped me in the past. David James has just signed for Bristol City, and a Bristol City fan rings up and says, "David James, England's keeper, he's let in 3. It's a disgrace. He should be ashamed of himself." And the presenter went, "Was he at fault for any of the goals?" And the bloke went, "Oh, I wasn't at the game." Oh, God. Arsenal 4, Leicester 3. That was entertaining, Jonathan, wasn't it?
It was. And I guess what could have been a pretty miserable week for Arsenal, it looked like being a miserable week with 10 minutes to go, has become sort of a positive. But I mean, I really hope people going to 3 at the back doesn't mean defenders are going to stop heading the ball. I mean,
I was watching this game in a pub with Matt Elliott and Danny Mills professionally, not because, you know, I hang around with them in pubs, and they were both incandescent with rage about the brutal lack of defending in the whole game, really.
Yeah, that confuses things, because I've made it a policy always to disagree with Danny Mills. But he's right. It was awful. I mean, it was hilarious. But
do you have any other policies, or is it just the Danny Mills?
Danny Mills is just wrong about everything. Oh, like he's sort of. I had a huge row with him on LBC once.
Oh, really? Was that about immigration?
It was about his ridiculous plan to have a fifth division and reserve teams in. Yeah.
That was wrong, but I think he's right on the. I mean,
he's right on the defending.
I still don't understand zonal marking. I mean, I don't know if I'm not understanding it because I'm not clever enough, or I just think at any level of football, get a man and stop him scoring, and then you probably won't concede from corners.
Well, hang on, you mean from set plays?
Yeah.
Well, the reason teams. I mean, there's pros and cons for both zonal and man marking, but the reason that, say, Rafa Benitez would give you for why he always zonal marks is if you man mark, you have a danger of people crowding your keeper. And also, if you're sort of, a yard away from somebody trying to mark them, or you've got a hand on them, if they get a run on you, they're past you. Yeah. You know, you can't do anything about it. So the idea of giving more space and attacking the space, is that you're at least moving with momentum into the challenge. But,
I like there are pros and cons, but what would, if you were Arsene Wenger, what would you do?
Resign. I'd have resigned last year.
Paolo, you wanted to add to this interesting tactic?
I agree with Jonathan on the there are merits and weaknesses to both systems. I think that with man marking, the other thing is if you're clever about it, you get a couple of players close to each other and cross over and cause defenders to run into each other. There's lots of things you can do to mess with a man marking system as well. Yeah, zonal marking when it's done badly. I think what frustrates people personally, I think what people will get annoyed about with zonal marking is they can't point at one player and blame them. Whereas with man marking, you can more often. But actually,
you found me out there.
Actually, they can both work. They can both fail. I think when we talk about Jonathan's old-fashioned notions of defenders who, will win headers, what about the old-fashioned notion of actually having any centre-backs in your team, which Arsenal eschewed by the end of the game?
And they finished with a bizarre set where basically nobody was playing in a position apart from Czech, probably, on Giroud. There was no one in the right place at all.
Yeah, I mean, it was Monreal and Kolasinac on the pitch at the end at centre-back who... I mean, Monreal's played a fair bit of centre-back now, but more left-backs than centre-backs, perhaps.
Kolasinac was a centre-back really before last season.
True, so. Although even then, with a formation that was decidedly uneven because extra attackers have been brought on, in the 93rd minute or so, sort of pulling a pirouette in midfield and storming off up the pitch. So not a man inclined to stick to that rigid defensive duty, certainly. But I think well on the way to becoming a cult hero at Arsenal already. It was a wildly entertaining game. I'm going to just... off topic for a second, say that as a fan, it's noted on this podcast I'm an Arsenal fan. I was there not working on Friday. I really enjoyed football on a Friday night. Like, actually, people coming out of work but knowing that they, can go and have a drink and enjoy the evening and not worry about it. I appreciate that for away fans it's a very different equation, but we've already got midweek games, so that's already a thing that has to happen. I enjoyed it, and I know that's not necessarily going to be what everyone thinks, but just...
Were you booing after 72? About 70 minutes, there was some real... You could just sense a sort of rage, coming back.
I'm not that fan, but I think that if the game had been lost, then there certainly could have been plenty in the stadium who would have taken it badly. I thought it was interesting right at the end of the game. It was sort of chaotic, obviously, but actually, one of the things that I will be interested to see more as the season goes on, I thought Lacazette and Giroud actually offered something together that was quite interesting. I think having two genuine strikers on the pitch is something that Arsenal haven't done in quite a long time. I think even Sanchez, who scores a lot of goals, he doesn't operate like a traditional striker. And the two of them looked for each other. There wasn't this sort of sense of them tripping over each other and getting in each other's way. They were working in tandem, and that was something that I think it'll be interesting to see if Wenger will ever try that from the start, or if he'll try using them in different ways. But yeah, it was a chaotic game of football. Leicester were spectacular in the way they took their chances and the way they used Jamie Vardy as they have for several years. But yeah, it was a fun game of football.
That Ozil handball,
yep,
was that was unlucky for Leicester, wasn't it?
Yeah, the goal shouldn't have been allowed, but Craig Shakespeare wasn't too upset about it. He said, pointed out, yes, it was a handball, but we should have defended better. I think he perhaps made a bit of a boo-boo taking off Matty James and bringing on Kelechi. Iheanacho for his debut. I kind of felt sorry for him because it all went completely pear-shaped the minute he walked onto the field. Don't think it was particularly his fault or perhaps in any way his fault. But both Arsenal and, say, Liverpool, you know, like the they say about the mullet, both very businesslike up front, really impressive, and just party at the back where it was everything was hopelessly disorganised.
Well, let's talk about Liverpool. And you mentioned Shakespeare after the game saying, hey, look, that we should. It was a handball by Ozil, but we had plenty of time. Klopp wasn't quite so...
magnanimous.
No, he wasn't. And, Britos... is offside? Is he offside? I mean, the first time you see it, you think he's kind of level. Part of him is level and part of him isn't.
So, yeah, but it's the furthest part of your body with which you can play the ball. So, equally, it's really tight.
Yeah.
And you can't tell me Liverpool played for that to be offside. You don't play offside when the ball's 3 yards from the goal line.
It's a very deep offside trap.
So it's, you know, yeah, technically probably the decision was wrong, but get on and play. You know, it's... Yes, the goal should have been ruled out.
It was Firmino could have just whacked it clear with his head and ducked out of it, really.
But he's got such wonderful teeth, they might have jarred them.
But interestingly, Sean Ingle once pointed out, and I'm not saying this is the case with Roberto Firmino, but that Sean's uncle, I think, or cousin, used to train, Brendan Ingle, the boxing trainer, used to train Prince Nazim Hamid, and... he spent a fortune getting his teeth fixed, and Brendan Ingle reckoned as soon as he did that, that was the end of his career as a boxer because he was afraid of getting hit in the mouth and ruining his expensive Delph.
Interesting. Although, to be fair to Firmino, his touch to bring down that ball for Salah's goal was one of my favourite footballing moments of the weekend. What did you make of Liverpool, Paolo?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose a bit like Arsenal, you looked at them and thought, well, this is the same strengths and the same failings. I think Mo Salah is definitely a fun signing. He's got, as everyone knows about him, he's got bags of pace, and I think that him and Mane getting in behind is just something that works. But I think the fact they conceded from a set piece, again, I had a stat and I have helpfully not written it down for myself about, I think it's actually from, I stole it from The Guardian's 10 Things We Learned, so it's probably in there. You know, they concede it from set pieces at a rate that's matched by only one or two teams in the whole league.
I think it was 27 since Klopp took charge. Yeah. He's been in charge. That was his 100th game.
And the really concerning thing with regard to the game against Hoffenheim on Tuesday is 25% of Hoffenheim's goals last season came from set plays, which was 16 out of 64, 16 being joint top with Bayern for goals from set plays in the Bundesliga last season.
When a team is that bad at defending corners, is trying to win corners a tactic that opponents would go for, yeah?
In the same way, if you've got a great free kick taker, trying to win free kicks around the box is a tactic. But and the club has to take responsibility for that. You know, it's, yeah, you can bring in Van Dijk, but that's not going to solve the problem. Dan Lovren looked a great defender at Southampton, and he's looked hopeless at Liverpool. Harry hopeless is maybe too harsh, but defending set plays is about practice and about working the training ground.
How are they not doing that? I mean, Klopp's such a brilliant manager.
Well, maybe they are, and the players are just thick.
But why would Liverpool's players? Why would players become thick when they get to Liverpool?
Well, I don't know. that Liverpool performance against Watford, I was really impressed with Watford, by the way, suggested to me losing Coutinho wouldn't be that big a blow and that they have more important things to worry about.
Do you subscribe
to
that?
They were really good going forward. Like.
Yeah, no, they do look great. But Liverpool sort of look great. They can have a great 20 minutes. It's sort of not unlike Arsenal. They just...
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right when they play a team like Watford who sort of come at you a bit. I think Coutinho is the best player they've got at unlocking a sort of tight defence. I also think psychologically losing Coutinho when so much has been staked on keeping him, I think that would be a blow for them. It would sort of just confirm, no, you're a second-tier club and your attempt to bridge that gap is being frustrated and immediately you get close to doing it.
All right. Thanks, guys. That'll do for part one. In a moment, part two. Before that, here's Max Rushton with some adverts. Welcome back to part two of Guardian Football Weekly. Newcastle 0, Tottenham 2. Here's an article from the 10th of February, 2017. Rafa Benitez says Jonjo Shelvey has to mature and be mindful of teams targeting him as the Newcastle midfielder prepares to face Wolves the first time since serving a 5-game ban. Did anybody think that was... I mean, how stupid was that? It was just so stupid. And actually, Alan Smith on commentary, who is really nice, and obviously never got booked, did he, famously? Or did he get booked once? I forget.
He did in the end.
Yes, yeah. He got booked once. But he said, he was trying to say, but he was too polite to say it, if you are going to stamp on someone, you might as well actually stamp on them. But before that happened, actually, it was a pretty turgid, not particularly fascinating game, Jonathan.
Yeah, which I think there'll be a few of those with Newcastle this season. I think, yeah, Rafa's very good at setting up a team to defend. They were very compact, very narrow. And that despite losing two defenders to injury pretty quickly. You know, a lot of stuff went against Newcastle yesterday, and then, yeah, Shelvey compounded that with the second most egregious red card of the weekend.
Rafa said that Harry Kane should have been sent off.
Yes, it was a bad tackle. I mean, he could easily have been sent off. I don't think it was like hugely malicious, but it was wild.
It was a lot more dangerous than the offence for which Shelvey got sent off.
Yeah, I mean, it was probably a worse foul than Cahill's. I think he was fortunate.
As a tweet from Anything But Penalties says, do Spurs need to sign a right back when they have Kyle Walker-Peters? And we've yet to on the pod, and I know lots of people have, just enjoyed how much he has the same name as Kyle Walker. It's just a marvellous thing. And, you know, more of that should happen. It's a bit like in Championship Manager when, you know, you played for so long that it started replacing player names. And I had, like, you know, Ken Weggerly up front. And it just came together that he has exactly the same name. I thought he played well. I thought it was generous to give him man of the match.
Yeah, well, I mean, you got, after Danny Rose's comments, Ben Davis and the other fullback scoring the second goal as well. So, yeah, fullback's still okay for Tottenham. No, he looks like a promising player. I can't sort of offer a developed, well-rounded opinion of him. I did see someone who responded to the Rose comments on Twitter, but just a simple tweet that was just Danny Rose Peters ? So, yeah, who knows what's going on in that youth sector. I think the point about the injuries at the back is worth noting for Newcastle as well, because I think, unless I am blaming the wrong person here, I think it was Lascelles who came on.
Yeah, he did.
Who was also guilty of being out of line with the rest of the defence to allow Dele Alli to score that opening goal for Tottenham. I think he was the one playing everyone onside and by quite a few yards. So I think that's not to be underestimated in this whole mix. I also think Newcastle did play quite well, but we're not exactly given the best of situations to deal with by a point that Shelvey got sent off.
It's a slightly strange situation that LaSalle is the club captain, but appears not to be part of their best back four. The Kyle Walker-Peters thing, the nearest equivalent is an England squad in the mid-80s that had two Gary Stevens and a Trevor Stephen.
That is good, isn't it?
It was nightmarish.
Which of those Gary Stevens did you prefer?
The one born in 19...
The blonde Everton or the dark-haired Spurs?
Blonde Everton, yeah. One born in 63 rather than 62.
Okay.
Well, one was born on the 27th of March, one was born on the 30th of March.
Extraordinary.
So the coincidences just stack up.
I was just going to say on the LaSalle point, it's the same in Arsenal with Mertesacker being captain and not playing particularly.
But at least he's a sort of old man.
True. You know? True. That's just got me thinking whether there are more in the Premier League that I'm not thinking of.
You can put comments below the line if you like.
Yeah,
I know.
Interview Mike Ashley did.
Oh, I had a question about this. I haven't seen it yet.
It's quite sort of conciliatory, in which he admitted to making a lot of mistakes.
He apologised to Chris Hughton.
Yeah.
Was naive to sack Big Sam.
Said he should never have tried to change the name of the stadium, conceded that, you know, he is not rich enough to compete with the Manchester City. And it just struck me, these are not the softly spoken, conciliatory words of, you know, the hard-nosed puking in a pub fireplace after an extreme drinking competition.
Ordering.
Ruthless. Borderline slave master we've come to know in the public. I want to know, who is the real Mike Ashley?
The real tragedy of him sacking Sam when he did is that we never got the drinking contest between Mike Ashley and Sam.
Pints of wine.
The thing about that story that I liked was the guys in the court case with saying, you know, that they would get deliveries of kebabs, plural. Like, at what point in a, you know, like, once you've had one, isn't that, you don't need another, like, I don't think I've ever been on a night out where I've had a second kebab.
A friend of mine, Clemo, hello Clemo, if you're listening in Australia, who famously used to buy two kebabs on the way home.
Mm-hmm.
So he'd eat one,
yeah,
and then leave the other one under his bed.
No, God.
So that when he woke up in the morning, it was there, breakfast in bed.
I can almost top the unpleasantness of that, which is when I was many years ago doing my journalism course and I was living in Portsmouth. I remember there was a story in the paper about a Portsmouth DJ who was working, I think, in Ibiza, and his had the thing he missed most from home was his favourite kebab shop. So his girlfriend would fly out every 2 weeks with kebabs wrapped in cling film for him that she would presumably have to, you know, sit for several hours in her hand luggage and then on the other side, whatever state.
Could go in the hold, which is slightly cooler, isn't it, I believe.
Yeah.
And then straight to the freezer.
But if they were wrapped in, like, normal sort of kebab foil or whatever, she'd look like some sort of drug mule.
She's having 28 years.
Strapped around
the Bangkok Hilton for importing Donna meat. It's probably more. It's probably worse for you, isn't it? Brighton nil.
No.
Brighton nil. Manchester City 2. My first line here is just Pep Guardiola's great ankle tapping chinos. I just thought he looked tremendous on the touchline. It was a sort of a bit like Spurs whenever Newcastle's pretty regulation. Didn't excite me particularly. Nice to see Jesus and Aguero playing up front together.
Yeah, I think City were more on top earlier than Spurs against Newcastle, I would have said. I mean, even though it took them a while to get the goal, I just felt like with this game it was inevitable, it was coming. Yeah, City looked good.
Anyone want to add anything more than that?
Nah, it was a free swing for Brighton, wasn't it? Their fans all seemed to have a lovely time, even in defeat. Absolutely no shame in losing 2-0 to City on their first game back in the Premier League. And they made a decent fist of it, just weren't good enough.
George has sent a tweet saying, could Crystal Palace become the fifth member of the post-Big Sam relegation party? 3-0 home defeat to Huddersfield. I was annoyed by the number of flags that Palace, the club, had placed on seats so that they were all waving the damn thing. So if you were sitting behind someone, I suppose it would have been like a strobe, wouldn't it? Watching watching yourself concede all those goals against Huddersfield. Actually, might have made it better, I suppose. But well done, Huddersfield, Jonathan.
Yeah, played really well. And Meunier looked a proper striker. So I think very encouraging for Huddersfield and very worrying for Palace. And I think what's really worrying is, I did wonder this about De Boer. Obviously, his record at Ajax was brilliant, you know, 4 titles. But there was sort of grumblings from Ajax fans about him that they didn't seem entirely convinced by the end. And Ajax fans are pretty demanding, and I think occasionally unreasonably so. And into a basket case of a club that, you know, many managers have failed at. It's not necessarily a black mark against you if you fail at Inter. But I did wonder, can De Boer do it outside of the Ajax framework? Or is he somebody so sort of born into that framework that he needs? In the same way that Frank Rijkaard's record everywhere apart from Barcelona as a manager is pretty bad. That, you know, he knows a way to play and he needs that system around him. And when you're taking over from Big Sam, it's obviously a very different style of football, and that transition will not be easy, and already it's proving not to be easy.
Do you think there's anything in Premier League teams underestimating teams coming up from the Championship just because even if they're told this is a really big game and they're good, you just think, well, it's only Huddersfield?
Yeah, I mean, I should have done some statistical research on this. I've thought of this sort of over the last sort of 3 or 4 years. I think it's a really, if you're a team like Palace or like Sunderland, which is when I was thinking this, playing a team who's just been promoted early in the season is bad because, you know, they're on a massive high, a bit, you know, slightly on a high into nothing. If they lose, well, so what? But they've got all that euphoria of promotion. They've got the excitement of fans being in the Premier League or being back in the Premier League. If their squad is slim, that's not going to have kicked in. So in a sense, it's the worst time to play a newly promoted team right at the start of the season.
Disappointingly, I thought of this great joke about Wayne Rooney's goal drought since his last goal for Everton was in, you know, 2003 or something. And before I could do it on the radio, Gary Lineker had already done it on Match of the Day. So perhaps that shows it wasn't such a brilliant joke. but look, Wayne Rooney, he looked fitter and faster.
No, I think he looked very lean. He tends not to look particularly fit, even when he's at his fittest. You know, he's sort of potato-shaped. But, yeah, he looked really fit and lean. And scored a really good goal. That was a fine header. And prompting me to possibly revise my decision that, you know, I thought there's no way this transfer would work out. It's too early to say. But he did look in much better shape than I've seen him in for a very long time.
And according to Ronald Koeman, has this expert skill of falling over at the right moments.
Can you elaborate?
Well, basically, Koeman said that one of the things he appreciated from Rooney in the late game was managing the situation of having the lead. And, you know, some other players, when they would get into a tussle, might stay on their feet when actually he would fall over and win a free kick, and that's what they needed. It's basically what Koeman said. I'm slightly paraphrasing, but it's along those lines.
So Koeman supporting diving when necessary.
Not diving.
Falling over
okay. When, you know, you get that little bit of contact and you can have the free kick.
It's game management. It's like you said about Robbie Brady getting the free kick.
Yeah.
And he went for goal in the embers of the game when he
should have booted
proper
over
game
Stafford
management
Bridge.
Just boot the thing over the stand.
Well done, Everton. Then West Brom 1, Bournemouth 0. Here's a tweet. I once again have not written who sent it. Can Jay Rodriguez, who signed for West Brom, just so you know, Barry,
thank you,
break into the England setup if he stays injury free at West Brom? Jonathan.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, I think he's nowhere near the level he was before the injury. The player I'm most interested in from that game though is Higazi. He's what, 6'4", huge, good in the air, can pass a ball. And I was a little bit, I'd seen him, not a huge amount, but I'd seen him for Fiorentina when he didn't have the happiest of times. And then, seeing him playing Fiji, you thought, no, he's actually a really good player. And I guess he's the ideal player, or Pulis the ideal manager for him to get the best out of him, because he's definitely a player with the physical attributes that Pulis can use.
Southampton 0, Swansea 0. And that's it for part two. In part three, we'll look ahead to Liverpool in the Champions League. I'll read out the other Champions League fixtures. We'll do some tweets, talk El Clasico, and we'll talk Neymar too. Back in a second. Welcome back to part three. Before we touch in more detail on Liverpool in the Champions League, last week, Jonathan, you went for your orthopaedic insoles, and the listeners want to know how your feet are.
They're much better. They feel much more flexible. But I am slightly taller while wearing them. Oh. And that definitely led to a difficulty getting my length right bowling on Saturday. Nonetheless, I took 4 wickets, but it was shambolic.
Okay.
So you almost got a century and you almost got a 5-for. This could have been your greatest day. And probably was your greatest
day. The bowling was on Saturday, the batting was on Sunday. But what has happened now, my batting average has gone above my bowling average the first time this season, which is, as you know, is the sign of a true all-rounder.
Well done, Jonathan. The fact that you can get to see Wilson play cricket on a Saturday and a Sunday, that's a marvellous thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I might have to actually watch some football sometime.
You're bluffing it really well. We touched on it briefly. Hoffenheim, Jonathan, Liverpool playing the Champions League Tuesday night. You mentioned the set pieces thing. How difficult is this game for Liverpool?
I think it is difficult. I mean, Hoffenheim only lost 4 times last season, finished 4th in the Bundesliga. Their pre-season, for what that's worth, I think they've won every game. They played Rot-Weiss Essen in the Cup at the weekend, won 1-0 away. Seemed to have been a slightly rusty performance. I mean, I barely watched any Premier League football, so I certainly wasn't watching the German Cup first round. But yeah, I think it is difficult. Liverpool's away record in Europe recently is pretty poor. I think they won 1 of the last 12 away in Europe, I think. I mean, their home record is excellent, but away they've struggled. And I think what's interesting is Nagelsmann is, he's turned 30 in the summer. He's one of this great new generation of German coaches who like to press high up the pitch. So in a sense, he's sort of an heir to Klopp, 20 years younger than Klopp. But their styles of pressing are actually very different. Liverpool's tackling stats are very high. So I think Liverpool had the second most tackles per game in the Premier League last season.
Firmino made more tackles than any of their centre-backs.
Right. Mm. And Hoffenheim, I think, had the third lowest tackles in the Bundesliga, but had the higher. Their interceptions per game are 19 point something, and Liverpool's last year were 10 point something. So Liverpool's pressing is all about get the man, make the tackle. Hoffenheim's is all about blocking the passing lanes. So it's two different styles of pressing, which would be interesting to see that against each other.
Nobby 1471 asks, can any of you play in goal for Liverpool tomorrow night? I think that's a little harsh on millionaires. I'm actually comparing it to us, he is, but...
Yeah, I mean, I would do a substantially worse job. I'm pretty confident of that.
But I didn't think he was that poor. Was he that poor the weekend?
I thought he didn't have a very good game. See, these teams with ropey defences, I can't say defence set piece. You wonder, is it the defenders that are giving the goalkeeper the heebie-jeebies, or is it the goalkeeper that's giving the defenders the heebie-jeebies?
Are you about to hammer Shea Given again?
A certain Shea Givenness about this. I've expounded this theory at great length on this podcast before and gotten myself in very serious trouble in my native land, where you don't criticise Shea Given ever.
But I don't want to go down that road again. Shea Given was extraordinarily overrated as a goalkeeper.
Oh, I agree.
Because he's a man who gives the impression of being much smaller than he actually is.
Or no, I couldn't agree more.
I've got him.
He's 7'2".
I've got him at 4'8". You see?
No, I think he's about. I think he's a touch over 6 foot, okay. But he gives the impression of being sort of, you know, 5'8", 5'9". In fact, there was he played 16 games for Sunderland right at the start of his career, which is often forgotten, and he had an absolute shocker in a 3-3 draw at Watford. And I remember coming out of that game going, that lad will never make it. Because there's been loads of hype about this great young keeper we just got. I think we got him on loan from somewhere.
So we do have to read there's some sort of Sunderland Newcastle bitterness between.
No, not at all.
Absolutely.
I mean, in fact, this is sort of a fundamental point, I think, that you know, whenever a team signs a player, you always get people who go, oh, yeah, I saw 15 Hoffenheim games last season, and this is true. So, like, why did you watch 15 Hoffenheim? What were you doing? Like, yeah, unless you're actually a Hoffenheim fan, why would you watch? Yeah, Leipzig coming second being one of the stories of Germany last year. I think I watched 4 Leipzig games last season.
I think you should watch more football.
Start playing cricket.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think we make our... Yeah, we're not professional scouts. We make our judgments on players on tiny little details. So in my head, Alexandre Lacazette is quite quick and runs in straight lines, but essentially quite average, because I saw him playing in the Under-20 World Cup in 2011 and have barely seen him since. I saw him for Lyon in the Europa League last season once, I think. I've been pleasantly surprised by him. But I think our judgments of players are fundamentally skewed by the tiny number of times we see them. So I'd written Shea Given off entirely for his career on the basis of one game away at Watford in 1996. And was right. Yeah. What was your point, Barry? You make a point I interrupted you, sorry. About Minolet, and does he spread panic, or does the defence give panic to Minolet?
Yeah, or is it a bit of both? Yeah. I don't know.
Well, Minolet's never been good at those balls swung into the near post. That was true at Sunderland as well.
Like, I mean, Titus Brambles, for example, became a laughing stock at Newcastle as a defender. And I always thought Titus Brambles was quite a good defender until he started playing in front of Shea Given. And I can't help but think his sort of descent into slapstick was in some way related to the fact that he played in front of Shea Given.
What about
because he's not the only defender whose career has nosedived while playing in front of Shea Given. But anyway, I'm picking on Shea now. I'm going to
get... You really asked that question.
Terrible trouble.
I really don't know how we've gone this far down the Shea Given rabbit hole.
I agree with you.
We started off with a question about Mignolet.
But the last time I made this point on this podcast, a radio station in Ireland had a phone in. And... loads of people, and they didn't give me a right of reply, so I just had all these people ringing this radio station going, who's this Barry Glennon? He doesn't know what he's talking about. Never heard of him.
Are there photos of you at airports? Yeah, you know.
I got a phone call from my dad saying that he was driving somewhere and he had to pull into the side of the road because he was laughing so much at all the abuse I was getting that he thought he was going to crash the car.
Champions League qualifiers. Fitbar Corner, Barry, Celtic are playing Astana. How much research have you done on this?
I've done no research. I know Astana are a cycling team, mm-hmm. and they're the capital of...
you don't know what they...
You don't know this. Yeah.
They're a cycling... Kazakhstan, yes. They're a cycling team who wear light blue livery, and they're managed by Vino Vinokurov. Okay. I don't know anything about their football team.
Oh, well.
Their football team or anything like their cycling team, expect them to be of dubious moral fortitude.
I think
but
Nick
quite
Ames
good.
Went over there last year before, and did a piece on them. So if you Google Nick Ames Astana, okay. Then you'll...
If you do that and then read it out. Pause the pod, read it out, pretend it's part of the podcast. Napoli are playing Nice, Paolo.
Yep, that's the game I'm most excited about in that round. I think Napoli, anyone who... watch them more than the 5 times last season will know. Or even if you didn't even watch them 5 times, you probably know. They were fantastic attacking side. They've done very little in the transfer market this summer, which is fine because the team they have together is capable of competing for a Serie A title. They were close last season, and if you take out the month of October when Arkadiusz Milik got injured and they hadn't worked out the attack yet, they basically would have been right there with Juventus the whole way. So they're an exciting team. Mario Balotelli going back to Naples where his daughter lives, and where he had a little cry when he played there. That was the last time he played there, a few years ago, when he was there with Milan and he couldn't score a goal to dedicate his daughter, who he just found out was his daughter. So there's a bit of history there.
Is that like a sort of Jeremy Carl DNA test, or
there was a paternity test? There was a paternity test to confirm that he was Pia's dad, which proved that he was. And he wanted to dedicate a goal to her, which he couldn't. But yeah, no, I mean, Napoli are a team going in a very good direction at the moment, so I'm excited to see how they do. Nice, obviously, also a team who are coming off a fantastic season, so it should be a fun game.
Is there any... I was doing the rumour mill this morning. Are Napoli in danger of losing Lorenzo Insigne? He was linked with Liverpool, among other sides.
Yeah, I have seen this floating around. Would certainly be a surprise if they would let him go. I think, again, the...
He's a local lad, isn't he?
He is a local lad. No, although he has had at times fractious relationship with the owner, Aurelio De Laurentiis, although that goes for a lot of players who've been at Napoli in the last few years. But he signed a new contract last year. De Laurentiis is not a man known for letting anyone go for less than several times their market worth if he can get away with it. So I would be surprised if this happens, but... In football, money can talk, and you never know.
Before we talk about El Clasico and PSG, I've got in capitals, Paolo, what's happening in Italy? 8 question marks.
It was the Supercoppa Italiana last night, so Juventus playing Lazio. Juventus looked pretty drab for a lot of the game, which is interesting because obviously they're coming off a 6th consecutive league title and everyone's waiting for someone to knock them off that perch. Napoli will be among the hunters, and we've obviously got Milan have spent a ton of money this summer. Inter have had a fantastic pre-season, for what that is worth. It was sort of fun to have this game back at the beginning of the season because they've been doing it in the winter break recently and taking it to lucrative foreign climes, and so having it here as a sort of gauge of, okay, where are the champions, how are they playing, and seeing that actually having sold Bonucci and fielding a sort of distinctly flat looking Sami Khedira in midfield, they didn't look that hot, and they wound up losing 3-2. It was actually a brilliant game because they were 2-0 up. Paolo Dybala, who's just got the number 10 shirt and who is a sensational player, almost single-handedly gets them back in at 2-2 in the 90th minute, and then they go and concede again in injury time. So it was an entertaining game just on its own merits. Juventus have lost 2 of the last 3 Supercoppe, so I wouldn't worry too much that they're suddenly falling away, but certainly the sort of result that just gets everyone's ears pricked up ahead of the start of the season, to see them not being able to beat Lazio, and to see that maybe there's an opportunity if any of these chasing teams can start the season fast. Maybe Juventus won't.
Paolo, Keita Balde, mm-hmm. not in the Lazio lineup or squad. Does that mean, is that a sure sign he's off to Tottenham Hotspur?
It certainly has been, his relationship with the club does not look like it's in a great place right now. So I think it's a strong possibility he's off somewhere. Whether he's off to Tottenham specifically, I don't want to give you that that line because I don't have it. But yes,
and for Tottenham fans, obviously we all know everything about this player, but for Tottenham fans who don't,
Extremely quick, someone who's been moved around the front line in the last couple of years. I'm not massively sold on his finishing, but he's a young player who last season probably played some of the best football of his career, so I think he's got potential to become a very good footballer.
Did anybody watch the Spanish Super Cup first leg, El Clasico kick clash? Do you want to know what happened?
Yeah.
Cristiano Ronaldo scored and was sent off. Has anyone seen that clip?
I have seen
the clip where he got booked for taking his shirt off and holding his shirt up a bit like Messi did. And then he got a second yellow card for diving and was sad about it. He sort of, it was one of those where he went down in a challenge, but it wasn't like a swan dive or swallow dive, whatever you want to call it. And then he sort of pushed the ref in the back. I wouldn't say it was like, it wasn't a two-handed shove. It was somewhere...
It wasn't a Di Canio and Alcock.
No, it wasn't Di Canio and Alcock. And the ref had certainly better balance than Alcock. But it did. There was definitely enough of a push in there for him to potentially be in
so
trouble.
So it was a Di Maria on Michael Oliver.
I can't remember that one.
It was a push. With my hands.
Well, the suggestion is he will get further punishment. Sounds like it'll probably be at the lower end of the 4-12 match ban. That is sort of the recommended sentence for referee assault. So I'm going to go 4. I'd say it'll be the bare minimum.
By all accounts, Barcelona really weren't very good. Neymar scored on his debut. PSG beat Guayaquil. Would anybody like Neymar in numbers?
Sure.
6 shots, 88 passes, 7 key passes, 22 duels. I like a duel in a not obviously on horseback, but that's how I like to think of them. And
that's 73%.
Oh, fuck off, Baron. 73% duel success. Any thoughts? Do you want to add anything? to either of those things. Right, Football League, very quickly. Fulham's. Did you, anyone see Fulham's Thomas Callas get sent off after 39 seconds?
I think he was hard done.
Oh, it was an outrage.
It was 31 seconds.
Oh, really?
By
okay.
You almost added 25%. 31 seconds. Yeah, for sort of being last man back. He wasn't really the last man back.
In the corner of the area, there were like eight men further back.
But, I mean, it's quite a nice record to have. Fulham didn't lose. He'd be able to dandle his grandchildren on his knee someday and say, let me tell you about the time I got sent off after 31 seconds. It's a good story. It's better than your Trevor Nelson microwave anecdote.
At no point did I sit on my granddad's knee and he tell me anything interesting about his life.
I'd never met either of my granddads. Okay. They were both dead before I was born.
Sorry to bring that up. I'm sorry for your loss.
I feel like I've missed out.
Paolo?
I don't know about sitting on his knee. My granddad tells me sometimes weird and wonderful stories about
being... It would be weird if you were sitting on his
right
knee.
Right now.
That seems odd. Yeah, I mean, we had a conversation about ferreting the other day because my granddad was a farmhand and he used to go ferreting for rabbits, and I thought it was sort of interesting, but, that's me.
Anything to add, Jonathan?
One of my grandfathers died before I was born. The other one worked at ICI to get out of the war. Oh. And he had loads of... They used to drink rum and peppermint for some reason. I don't know if that was just like... That was all the booze you could get in Middlesbrough in those days. But
that sounds
I've just revealed that I have Middlesbrough heritage there, haven't I? So
yeah, okay.
I've tried to cleanse it, but...
well done, Sunderland. You won. Barry said, I've never been less confident of getting anything out of a game yesterday. Well done.
That was quite a shock.
Cardiff 2-2, they beat Villa.
It's the immutable law of the X, actually, because Lewis Grabban scored three goals in that match against Norwich, two for Sunderland and one for Norwich.
Although you did say you were convinced Chicharito would score for West Ham, but Old Trafford didn't, did he? Hate to disprove.
The problem with the immutable law of the X is it is mutable, isn't it? Because Sissoko really didn't do much against Tottenham at the weekend.
I think the very fact that he was on the field was quite an achievement.
There's a good article in The Guardian about Blackburn and their fall from grace, if you want to read that. And well done. Yeovil played 2, 1-1, lost 1, goal difference -5 is impressive. That'll do. You happy with that,
Hull?
Barry? Happy, everyone?
They went for Hull. Leonard Slutsky, I think, could be
the man.
Yeah.
His English is hugely impressive.
It's very good, yeah.
But he seemed very camp.
Well, that's good, because they're not enough camp managers, are they?
Oh, no, I'm all for it.
He's sort of a sort of bouncy, jolly man. Yeah. He's kind of... I like him. And he's very, very smart. He's very bright.
Have you had dinner with him yet?
I only had lunch with him. I haven't had dinner.
Oh, that's the next stage.
Hull's press office is kind of proving somewhat intractable on over a matter of dinner.
Do you ring press office and say, could I go out for dinner with the manager?
I had an interview lined up with Slutsky. Mm. We'd arranged it. And Slutsky was happy to do it. And literally the day beforehand, Hull's press office called it off. And this is an absurd thing that I was getting texts from Slutsky saying, yeah, I'm available 8:30 tomorrow night. And Hull's press office was going, no, he hasn't got time. I said, he's got texts. He's texting me saying he wants to meet up.
I must just mention Carsten, who's a Wolves fan, who's very angry with us about saying they're Pedro Mendes FC. He sent a tweet saying, now that Wolves have beaten two favourites
George,
promotion.
George Mendes.
What did I say?
Pedro.
Oh, Pedro Mendes, you're right. He's not such a good agent, is he? George Mendes. Now that Wolves have beaten two favourites for promotion in style and with only three Mendes clients, would the panel nuance their views on the club?
No.
No. They're doing very well and help win me quite a lot of money at the weekend because I got a ridiculously optimistic accumulator up. They were in it. But I'm not sure why Wolves fans are being so defensive. Wolves are what they are. Everyone knows what they are, but it seems to be working.
Yeah,
and good luck
it.
To them.
Yeah. I would take Mendes at Cambridge. No points from two games and out of the Carabao Cup. Right, if you've enjoyed this episode, great. And you can review it and be within a chance of featuring on the weekly podcast column here. Just email podcast@theguardian.com. We're on Facebook and Twitter. Review us, rate us, all those kind of things. Barry, cheers. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Max.
Hope to see you soon.
Yes.
Paolo, thank you.
Cheers.
Jonathan, thanks very much.
Thank you.
We'll be back on Thursday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.